Thank you very much. So can you hear me okay if I stand over here?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, because otherwise I cannot see you. So today I'm going to be talking about a few strategies we can use to accelerate breeding progress in wheat. So this is going to be a few several different projects that I've been working on. But let's say to start, I wanted to start with a breeding equation and motivate it from the standpoint of selection. So let's say this is our population and this is our mean. If we were like to move the population forward, we are selecting a number of individuals who are the best, and this is what we call the selection differential. And then we have a response to selection, which is the when we see the progeny in the next generation, the difference between the mean and the original population. And this is our response to selection equation based on, and this, how much response we have has to do with this selection differential, how much intensity of selection and how much variance do we have there, and then also on the heritability of the trait. And we can also write this in this other notation. The heritability is just this, and the selection differential is the intensity and the phenotypic variance, the standard deviation. And then we can also add the number of cycles we can have in a year. So there are a few things that we can do in a breeding program to accelerate the breeding. So some of the things I'm going to be talking is how do we actually reduce this phenotypic variance? How do we control for the phenotypic variance? Okay, and then how do we actually have a higher heritability so that we can move the population forward, and how do we have how do we deal with this intensity of selection? And so for controlling that phenotypic variance, we have two strategies. One is controlling the microenvironment, and that's the environment of each plant, and each plant is going to behave different from plant to plant and plot to plot, and we can control that with a good experimental design. The other part is the macroenvironment, and that's the environment of the plant associated with a location, so time and space, a location and a year. And then we usually evaluate multiple environments, and we need to deal with those in a good and proper way so we get the maximum gain. So the first project I'm going to be talking is about this, comparing the experimental design for large genomic studies. And this is the work of one student in Uruguay, Alejandra. And what we did here is we had this large field of wheat in which we had the same management for all the wheat fields, and then we can divide that in different plots, and we can simulate on top of that, on top of those different experimental designs. So a completely randomized design, we can simulate a randomized complete block design. We can simulate more advanced experimental designs that people are using for genomic studies, like alpha designs or augmented designs. And what we did there, or what we found there, is this is a completely randomized design. This is the randomized complete block. This is the alpha design. And these are the PREP or augmented designs. And these are the measurements that we are using to evaluate whether this was good or not. This is just a model fit. This is whether we are recovering the top 15% of the genotypes. Are we ranking the genotypes, at least the top 15%, in the same way? This is a measure of how well are we separating two individuals, and this is a measurement of the correlation between the genotypic value that we simulate and the actual estimated value for that genotype. And you can see that for each one of these designs, it was good to have a spatial correlation, spatial correction afterwards, because we get better in every single one of the parameters by doing spatial corrections. And you can see that throughout the experimental designs. But the other important thing is that from here, you can also see that the best spatial correction does not compensate for a good or better experimental design. So in this case, the CRD is similar to the alpha design without spatial correction, but when you include the best model, this one outperforms everyone else. So a few notes from here, and I know this is the molecular part, but I think it's very important because we're doing tons of phenotypic evaluations and we need to do them properly. And so the best experimental design in this case is the alpha. We did this for 15 genotypes, 50 and 200 genotypes, okay? And the best experimental design was the alpha. The PREP, you know, we're doing a compromise. We're using less resources, but we are compromising in the precision of the mean estimates. And the other thing is that feature corrections help, but they're not a substitute for good experimental design. And I think that's very relevant, and I wanted to point it out here, because we tend to forget those basic principles when we do all our genomic evaluations. The other thing I told you about, the macroenvironmental variability. So let's say we have these two genotypes. This is genotype one and genotype two in environment one, and in another environment, they behave like that. So there is a classic crossover interaction, and deciding which one of the genotypes is the best is not a trivial thing. So usually we solve this in breeding programs by looking at the targeted population of environment, but if we have those two as the targeted populations of environments, we need to think about them more carefully when we do all our genomic studies. So the second objective is another work by another student, this is Bettina, who is looking at comparing strategies for exploiting this GBIE on large genomic studies. So can we predict across locations, across years, and across mega-environments? Okay, and for this, we have 147 advanced wheat lines evaluated in 35 environments, which are a combination of location and year, and we have 80,000 SNPs that we got from GBS data. And so then what we did is we played a little bit of with prediction models. So this is a genomic selection classic model, and what we're doing here, so this is an overall mean, so the response is an overall mean, this is a C, the matrix, that is an incidence matrix, and this G, which is the genotypic value, we're modeling it in different ways. With the way that most people model it is with an average across all the different environments, okay? So in there, what we have is we only have the additive relationship matrix or the kinship matrix and a genotypic variance. We're also proposing this modeling, which we're modeling the genetic relationship with the kinship, but also the correlation across environments. And by doing that, then what we're doing is we're comparing here. This is the predictive ability, so these are your classic correlations for accuracy that you get from the GBLAT average, and this is from the GBLAT GBIE. So if someone is above the diagonal line, that means that the GBLAT GBIE model performs better. Okay? So what we found is that when we're trying to predict for a single year and we model the GBIE across locations, it was not consistent, right? Not all the years we did better by modeling the GBIE. When we look at the locations across years, it seems that modeling the GBIE made sense. And when we look at the mega-environment, we had this a little bit of inconsistency there with the mega-environment 3. But this was for a small subsample, okay? And this was for a very small sample size so that we can do this across all the different sets of environments and locations. When we actually go to the larger population sizes, including all the individuals, what we found is that this GBLAT GBIE was the best model. And we can only use it for all the individuals when we have either the location where most of them were evaluated, or when we have mega environments in which we can actually put the genotypes that were not evaluated in all the environments together. So actually, modeling this GBIE makes a lot of sense, and we have higher prediction accuracies by doing it. When we try to figure out what these mega environments were, we found out that they had to do with years, and so we were a little bit puzzled by that because most of the times we cannot predict years. And so, but then when we look at them closely, we found that all of the mega environment 3 were Fusarium head blight years, so that's a very important disease in wheat. And mega environment 1 and 2 were non-Fusarium head blight. Years. And so now we have this model that can actually predict for yield under Fusarium head blight or non-Fusarium head blight, which is pretty powerful. So by looking at this GBIE and not treating the environment as just, you know, environment this or that, and trying to understand what are the environmental covariates or what are the other factors that make the environment, we actually figure out a good model for predicting, in this case, the non-Fusarium and Fusarium head-like years. Year-to-year variability, they are hard to predict. We knew that before we started. But I think that if we start to look at those more carefully, we can get the repeatable patterns of those years, and now we can build the models to predict it better. It is easier to predict the locations. It was best to predict the mega environments. So I think we need to do this characterization of the environments and the envirotyping. So the next work is another student that is working now on this, and this is unpublished already. It's not published yet. And what we did is, can we actually improve this prediction by dissecting what the environment is and looking at this environmental covariance? And what he did is he looked at a set of very large number of environmental covariates for all these 35 environments, and then did a factorial regression to try to figure out which one of those were the most important in the genotype by environment interaction. And then he compared for every single year the GBLAB model average. This was the GBLAB G by E, but also the GBLAB G by E with environmental covariates, a new model just modeling the correlation across environments using the covariates, and the GBLAB average with the covariates. And you can see that including those covariates was important and aid and help in our prediction ability every single time. So now our environments are not just the average, which was not very good most of the time, but they are not these black boxes that we cannot say anything about them because they are just year 2012, which means nothing. And we can actually have a model to predict those new environments. And that's what I just said. So the last part that I want to talk about is, so we have talked about this phenotypic variability, how can we actually improve the precision, how can we actually have higher genetic gains because we are increasing our heritability or our precision. The other thing is, you know, in breeding, most of the time, breeders do not make any random crosses, right? They do choose their parents because they will have complementarity for some traits. They don't just go and select the top 10 and intermate all of them together in most of the plant breeding situations. So when people moved to genomic selection, they started to do just that. They just started to intermate the top 10 and without any design thinking. So we started to think of new ideas of doing this better. So this is the logic. Let's say we have these two parents here. When we cross them, this is a progeny. Of course, under an additive model, it's going to be an average of the mean of the two parents. But now, if we have the same differences among the parents, but we have different variances in the progeny because now they have complementarity among those, then we can have a higher variance. If we have a higher variance, the top 10% of the progeny is going to be better in this situation than in this. And that was the logic for this paper. So is it best to select the best parents or the best crosses? And this is, again, another Bettina, my PhD student. And what we figure out here is that for a grain yield, this is the different, so black is all the crosses that are in common across the mid parents, choosing of the parents, or choosing them based on the variance, and the variance calculated in two different ways. For a grain yield, it didn't make a lot of difference to choose them just based on the parent performance. So that model seemed to work very good. However, for a grain protein, for traits that are not so complex, not so polygenic maybe, what we found is huge differences, and it made sense to select the parents based on the, select the crosses based on the parents' combination and not just on the parents. So the mean is the main driver of the progeny performance for yield, but the variance was very important for grain quality traits. So hopefully with this, I just presented a few different projects, but all of them are going towards how do we actually use these new technologies and this genomic selection into our breeding programs? How do we fit them into our programs? And how do we use them for making larger genetic progress? And with that, I would be happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lucia.
So we can have one question to her. Yes. Yes, please. So, your aim is to make molecular data, and the other question is your correlation matrix also is structured using the five pattern analysis.
Okay. So, actually, it's a K matrix. It's not, so it's based on the molecular data. So, we're using the realized additive relationship matrix for that model.
and the correlation for the modeling, the correlation we're using an unstructured model. So it's more intensive, a factor analytic could work. We did not have the capabilities to implement it in R at the time, unless we use ASRML R, so that's why we were using the unstructured instead of the factor analytic. But probably, so the factor analytic has shown to work very good for modeling the GBAE, so that you can try both of them.
Okay, if not, then again, thank you very much for your presentation. So I think that with these talks, so we have finished this session, and we would like to thank all the speakers. Please join me in thanking all of them.